Hi everyone, and welcome to The Other Room. My name is Orelu Aleshi, or Ore as my friends and family call me. The Other Room is a podcast that features conversations with exceptional African women who are defining and redefining their roles in life. These are women who are charting their work and life journeys with purpose. We will look at their career trajectory, the challenges they have had along the way, and the things they have learned on the path to where they are now. I hope that my guest stories will help reaffirm that you are where you are meant to be, and if not, will encourage you to make important decisions about your next steps. Our guest today is Abiodun Soyemi. Biodun is the head of business development and marketing of Pazino Homes and Gardens and Pazino Engineering and Construction Company. She's a graduate of theoretical and applied sciences from the University of Ibadan. She has over 20 years of experience in sales, marketing, and business development. Welcome, Abby. So thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited to have you, and I'm excited to talk to you about your life's journey, even though I know part of it. But still, I think this is going to be an educational time for me.
Yes, thank you. I've listened to some of the other podcasts, and I would say that they've been quite intimidating.
Really?
Some people are curing cancer. Carrying cancer already.
Nah. We all do the important work in different ways. So,
Carol, if you say so.
So, tell me about yourself. Tell me about your growing up. What was your childhood like? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Lagos, actually, in Nigeria. And I spent the earliest part of my formative years here in Lagos. I went to Corona School, Ikoyi, and my mom was a teacher there. So elementary education started here in Lagos. However, a few years later, my dad was transferred on the job. He worked with an airline, and he was transferred to Delta State, the south part of Nigeria, specifically Warri. So the entire family had to move. It was quite a major, you know, change for us, for my mom and for my siblings and I as well. And it was the first time we had ever been anywhere else in Nigeria apart from Lagos. And I have to say that it was quite an experience, really. We got to know a lot more about our country, you know, other cultures and tribes. They exposed us to a lot of things, really. I later went to Federal Government College, Warri. And I think I completed my secondary education there.
Okay. So did you have an idea of what kind of life you wanted for yourself when you were still in primary school?
No, believe me, I don't think I had any clue. I think my mom is a teacher, so I tend to be a bit empirical when it comes to education. And she would tell you that children at that age generally are still exploring, they're still growing. And I think it applied to me. So you have a lot of dreams, you know, you're allowed to dream as a child. And at some time, I believe I wanted to be a singer. At some time I wanted to act. There were so many dreams I had. But I think what is most important is your process, you know, when it comes to a child's education, both formally and informally. So formally, because my mom was a teacher, she actually was very, very involved in my education. Like I mentioned earlier, I actually was going to the same school in which my mother was teaching while we were in Lagos, which was Corona School. And then when we moved to Delta State, she was very concerned about our education because the system there was quite different from what you had in Lagos. And so she tried as much as possible to, you know, to get us placed in good schools. It wasn't the same as you would have in Lagos. And the environment and culture was quite different from what we were used to, you understand? So, but all in all, we were exposed to new things. So like I said, at that time, I was still exploring elementary education, primary school, definitely different. My mom was very much involved in my education, as I said, and she tried as much as possible to ensure that I had a solid foundation, especially in the basics, which was math, English, the sciences. I wouldn't lie, I was quite good in math. I think most of the time, apart from what you dream or aspire to be, a lot also depends on what you're good at, your major strengths, as it were. And I think my strengths at the time were in math and science. So that actually informed my decision as I went along into secondary school. I ended up being a science student by the time I started choosing my
Okay,
subjects
so
as
by the time you were choosing your subjects, what did you decide that you wanted to study in university?
was quite interesting. I being very hands-on parents, and I think a lot of parents were that way, in our time. They always tended to guide you. Kids of today tend to seem to have more freedom. Parents give you that room without maybe necessarily interfering in your decision making. But ours were different, and my parents were, were the typical parents of that time, which is, trying to tell you, look, you're good in science, you're good in chemistry. Why don't you study medicine since you can do bio? You're good in all these subjects. And my parents wanted me to be a doctor. I didn't like medicine. I mean, it got so bad that they actually used to buy medical books and stock them because I used to read a lot. I was an avid reader, in school, and I think that helped me. I read everything I could lay my hands on. You just name it. So in that way, I think I also ventured a bit into literature, but on a personal level as a hobby. So they felt they could also kind of influence my decisions by exposing me to certain books, medical books. But it actually had a negative effect, the opposite effect, actually. By the time I went through those books, I knew that I wasn't going to be a doctor, believe me, as much as I love biology and the sciences. My favorite subjects actually included math and geography. It was something that I just took to. So at the time, I wanted to study geology. That actually was one of my first choices when I was filling my form. But my parents, my mom specifically, were a bit old-fashioned. To them, they felt geology was a bit too masculine for a lady at the time. And they kept advising me, say, you know what, geology is not really for a lady. I mean, you can imagine as a geologist, you might end up having to, go off into, exploring in the bush and all that stuff. They were a bit, apprehensive about my choices. And I wouldn't lie, we did have some sort of major disagreement when it came to filling my form. And we came to some kind of compromise, and which was, I think, petroleum engineering. So they were like, okay, fine. Why don't you fill in petroleum engineering instead of geology and all that? But as we all know, by the time I did my JAM, I filled my forms, and I actually filled in University of Ibadan, and I think I chose one or two other schools. I didn't make the cutoff for petroleum engineering. However, I was offered a placement in the Department of Physics in UI. So it was not really my choice to study physics exactly.
So, what was your
So
experience like studying physics?
physics was pure science. It was interesting because, like I said, if you had a good foundation, which was in math and science in secondary school, it was like a continuation of what you'd always done, but on a higher level. And I won't lie, it was not easy studying physics. I mean, anybody who studied physics would tell you that physics is actually not an easy course. It's not an easy course to study. It requires a lot of focus and discipline, you understand? And so you pretty much needed to actually be very good at math and sciences and capable of abstract thinking
Okay, which I
as
know that
well.
you are. So, yeah. So, I think you must have enjoyed it a little bit.
Yes. To be quite honest, it was like most science and engineering subjects, a male-dominated field. In a class of like 40, you'd have 8 girls or women, and it was quite a challenge. I love challenges anyway. I always got, I mean, I'm easily bored when it comes to, facing certain things. If it's too easy, then I get bored easily. So it was quite challenging and interesting, actually. So yeah.
Okay. So then, so what was your first job after university?
When you're done with your tertiary education in Nigeria, you get to, you know, serve NYSC. So I served with Shell. And I think it's one of the things that laid the foundation for my interest in, you know, NGOs or philanthropic work, some of the things I'm doing now. In Department of Community Development, I think the division was External Relations East. And that particular department was responsible for relations, you know, communications with the communities where Shell operated. So most of the time you had to work with the indigenous, with the people. And the company at the time was actually involved in a lot of projects, you know, providing and building schools, hospitals, you know, education, and so many facilities for the communities in the South at the time. So I was posted to that department. At the time, Shell had this science program for the communities then in Bayelsa, in River State, and some other parts of Niger Delta. So a lot of graduates, especially science related graduates and even some engineering students, were sent out to the communities to actually, you know, provide educational support for the schools in the communities then. The department was also responsible for providing scholarships for indigenous children, you know, from these communities. So at the time, I worked very closely with that particular department. Like I said, it was funny because having, you know, spent some of my secondary education in the Niger Delta, I already had an idea of what life was like in that region of our country. I mean, I'm sure when you mention Niger Delta in Nigeria, a lot of things come to mind. So, but by the time I went for my NYSC, I got to see a lot more. I got to see a lot of things that actually made me think and, you know, question our system, as it were. So many people living in, you know, conditions that you would not expect them to be living in Nigeria at the time. Disadvantaged, especially from people from regions whereby a large, about 60% of our crude, you know, oil is coming from this community. You see these people living in abject poverty with no access to education, you know, or even healthcare. So I was working in that department as a youth combat. And then after the end of our NYC, we actually got a contract. You know, they retained us as contract staff for about another couple of months. So I would call that my first job because it was quite engaging, really, and quite an eye-opener. You know, I got my first experience there, and experience, you know, got my hands dirty, as it were. You know, I got to see a lot of, you know, a lot of the issues that actually we are seeing, a lot of people are just seeing now. I got to see that during my NYC. A lot of the tension in the Niger Delta region, you know, it's been in existence for a long time, you know. So that actually was my first experience on the job. Following that, after my contract ended with Shell, I got a job with an ISP, an internet service provider, also in Port Harcourt at the time. Yes.
Okay. So
yes.
What were you doing with the ISP? What kind of work were you doing?
Yes. So my career has actually been quite a journey, I wouldn't lie. Very interesting one. Having been in, you know, that, should I say, in Shell, you know, working with communities, I took a big leap in another direction, which was into IT. So I applied for a job with a company called Linksurf, an internet service provider. And since I was in Port Harcourt at the time, because Shell's headquarters in the South was in Port Harcourt, I was already, you know, I settled in there. And I got a job as a sales executive. So one of the major job description was to actually sell their products and services to companies in Port Harcourt there. It was interesting because I think at that time there was a lot of change going on when it came to communications in Nigeria. The mobile industry was growing, and so was in the section of the internet service sector as well. The IT sector was also experiencing some major growth. So I came into that industry at the time that it was still young, still new, you know. And I got to learn a lot. Yes. And having coming from a science background, it was quite easy for me to understand most of the basic principles, the products and the services and that we were providing. So it was easy for me to actually adapt to the system.
So you had started off your career in an oil and gas company. And oil and gas companies are, at least they were, the dream jobs. A lot of people who got jobs in oil and gas companies would stay there for their entire career. But you decided to move into technology, which at that time was a very, well, newish kind of area. So what gave you the confidence or motivated you to move from what was potentially a lifelong career to something as new and untested as technology?
Actually, I believe that was one of the times that I was introduced into the term, or should I say, the idea of maybe providence or destiny, because I didn't deliberately go looking for a job in IT, as it were. And then you are right about, you know, the perception by our generation at the time that, you know, an oil and gas or profession in that field was considered as should I say the creme de la creme, you know, at the time when it came to careers or professions. And I wouldn't lie, as at the time I was serving in SPDC, we all wanted to be retained and, you know, get a good job. I was working out of Port Harcourt office. And as you well know, Port Harcourt is actually the HQ or the base for a lot of oil and gas companies or oil servicing firms. I did do some interviews, I won't lie. However, a lot of other factors actually were considered when it came to my choosing my profession. I actually lost my dad around that time. My dad was ill, you know, in my final year, just before I left school. And it was for a while, you know, it was an extended illness. And then he died just around that time. I by nature, I'm a very independent person, you know. I like to pave my own way and make my own choices. So my decision to actually go to Port Harcourt was deliberate. I wanted to, you know, just, you know, spread my wings a bit. You know, the family at the time, everybody expected me to stay back in Lagos, you know, close to home, get IPSAV, redeploy and all that. But I didn't do that. So I actually settled in Port Harcourt, got a place to stay. And I was enjoying the freedom at the time. So I got retained with Shell as a contract staff. And one thing about contract, engagements then with the oil and gas companies was that it was always short term. You had to have it renewed. However, it was interrupted briefly because I lost my father. I had to come home, you know, at that time. And I had to make another choice. You know, should I stay back at home or just go back and try again? You know, but you know what happens when you lose a parent? You know, things, everything just changes, you know. And I think at that time, it's something that actually made me stronger. I knew at that time that, look, I had to, you know, dig in my heels and make it work, you know, make my career work. And also I had to learn to start taking care of myself, you know, as it were. So I decided to go back to Port Harcourt. You know, my mom wasn't exactly very delighted about that decision. But I just told her, look, I needed to go back and you know, make a life for myself. So I went back to Port Harcourt. But the contract job with the oil and gas firm was not renewed at the time. I had put in applications with other companies. Usually you do tests or interviews. And then somehow someone told me about a new company in Port Harcourt at the time, and that they were an IT firm. It was not something I'd considered previously, but I wanted to give it a try. So I did. And I got the job. I got the job, and after a couple of months, you know, since at the time, just like you mentioned, IT or internet service providers were a new thing, you know, in Nigeria at the time. IT was just growing. It was a field that I found interesting. You know, there was so much to learn. There were a lot of new things I was learning, you know, in that field. And I decided to continue. You know, I would attribute some of that experience to my boss at the time. She was a lady, a female. And, you know, we all know also that apart from the oil and gas industry, tech industries, also the IT industry is male dominated. There were very few females at the time. And I think she was about the only female in the management team at the time. And she kind of took me under her wing, you know. She was someone that I could relate to. And she did help me grow. She gave me that confidence. So that made me stay. It did make me stay in the industry. And okay. That was how, yes.
So what were you doing in that first job?
In my first job, I was brought on as a sales executive, actually. Because I recall the first, every time I remember my first job with Linksav, I can still recall the smell of carpet glue. The company was just opening its first office, you know, and I think I was one of the first employees at the time. So, yeah. So there was a lot we needed to, you know, get clients. Client base, you know, at the time was almost zero. So I think we were the few of us who started with the company were instrumental to its foundation and its growth at the time. It wasn't easy. It was tough. I wouldn't lie. My first real engagement was not an easy one. And I think it was good for me. You know, it gave me strength. It gave me that confidence to be able to face things, you know, head on. Irrespective of how difficult they were. Yes.
So what were the qualities that you felt made you good in your job? Because sales is not easy. Like you said, it's really tough. So what do you think the things were that really helped you do well in it?
Yes, because that was actually my first real sales role in even IT role as well. So it wasn't always easy. Yeah, there was a lot to learn. I was literally, though we had to go through some training, but I was literally learning on the job. And it required that, an attitude of, should I say, willingness to learn, you know, a certain level of humility. If you didn't have that, then you couldn't succeed. At least I knew that for myself. I had so much to learn and I was always willing to learn. You have to be willing to go the extra mile to learn from people who already had the experience. Also learn from your colleagues, because selling IT or selling software requires that you have product knowledge. Most of the time, if you wanted to sell internet services or any software or IT product to companies or corporate bodies, because most of the people that we had to sell to were corporate clients, you had to go to companies, you know, and try to sell to maybe the head of IT of a firm, you know, your solution. Questions that will be thrown back at you are technical questions. So you had to know your product. And it required a lot of, you know, time. You had to take time out to learn, to read up, to also learn from your colleagues. You know, also during your training, you had to pay attention. Another quality that helped me at the time was just perseverance and courage. Sales in any field requires that you have to be bold, because you expect it sometimes to make cold calls. Most of the people you are going to approach or companies, you don't know anyone there. So you had to be bold and have that courage to, you know, to just step up to the plate. Thirdly, you need to persevere, which means sometimes, I mean, you're trying to pursue a client and close a deal, but it takes time. So in some cases, you're lucky and the deal comes in quickly. But in some cases, you need to make repeated calls. You need to continue to pursue the clients. Or sometimes you need to be even more creative and innovative. Find other ways of actually, you know, closing that particular deal. Another quality that is required, which I also had to learn on the job, was teamwork. Sometimes you do tend to have people who are team players, or they will tell you, oh, I'm a team player, I work well with people. But it's really tested when you are put in certain positions, and especially sales, because you're all on a target. You know, sales teams are expected to be somewhat competitive amongst themselves because everybody has a target to meet up to. But I realized that you need your colleagues sometimes, in fact, a lot of times, to actually, you know, succeed in your role as a salesperson. I actually thrived in that role. I wouldn't lie. I did. And of course, I also know that I believe, like I said, in Providence. I know that I was kind of favored. I would say God favored me in another way, because at the time it wasn't easy. You know, I just lost a parent, you know, and I just found myself trying to, you know, make my way in the world. So
how did losing a parent now affect your own other choices in life? So after you lost your dad, you still went back to Port Harcourt, you know, you got a job and, you know, you continued working there. But then were there new demands, you know, made of you, or things expected of you after you lost your dad?
I am the first of six kids, so I'm the eldest. I do have younger siblings. And I actually am quite grateful for the childhood that I had, you know. My foundation that was laid by my parents. Every time I tell my mom, I said, I'm thankful that you actually spent a lot of time and resources to ensure that we went to school, that we were educated, you know. Every time I look at my siblings today, I thank God and I thank my parents for that mindset. And I try to tell even colleagues of mine that, look, if you're going to do anything for your kids, ensure that their education is your priority. So fortunately, I had completed my tertiary education. I was, you know, at least equipped to go look for a job. My siblings at the time were still in school. And so by the time my dad died, the focus, of course, was for every one of them to complete their education, just like I did. Exactly. So, yes, being the eldest, I'm sure you would understand. you understand my perspective, which is that you're always given this sense of responsibility. Your parents always put you in charge of your younger siblings. It's something that is put on you from the first time a sibling comes into the family, second sibling comes into the family. So I had five. My mom, there was always the idea that, look, take care of your siblings, tell them to do this and all that. So I was always put in charge of something. So I knew that to some degree, I had to, you know, put that in mind. My one of my sisters had to come live with me in Port Harcourt. And since I was working at the time, I had a place, I'd rented a place. She decided to school there. So it was one of the things that I took on at the time to ensure that, you know, she was doing fine. And she could actually complete her education in Port Harcourt at the time. So the onus was on me to create an environment that was conducive for her education, which was very, very important. You know, some sense of stability. I always noted that was always essential for any young person or kids to actually, you know, succeed through school. You had to give them a good environment, a home. So that was actually one of my priorities at the time. Also, my dad passing away made me strong. I was very close to my dad. I was what you would call a daddy's girl in a way. My mom always felt my dad spoiled me. He'd always been the one to encourage me to express myself. You know, my dad never raised me as a girly girl. You know, he was always into sports. He encouraged me to do anything that I wanted to. He exposed me to a lot, literature, books, anything. You know, he never held his girls back. We're four girls, and my dad never felt that because we were girls, we couldn't do anything. So also, that was why I was in Port Harcourt. I wouldn't say I was fearless, but I had that strength, you know, that was given to me that, look, no matter where you find yourself, you can do it. So I always had friends who always looked at me funny sometimes, as in, you just leave Lagos and you're just in Port Harcourt here, just doing your thing, living in one flat and all that. But I never felt like it was something that was beyond my ability or capability. You understand? So yes. The onus was on me to make it work, to make a way for myself in the world. And then I think youth, I always tell people that youth is an armor. You know, when you're young, there's still this level of innocence, you know, which I, now that I think, look back, I think I had, you know? Yes. Mm. When you're young, you're still hopeful, you know? Mm. It's like a blank page given to you to write on, you know? You feel you can do anything. At least that's how I felt at the time. And yes, yeah. Every new experience was something that I cherished. I cherished at the time. Mm. I also joined the church then in Port Harcourt. So I had friends. Yes, I did. I must give credit to my friends. Mm. I had friends. I had a group of friends that were part of the support group, which I believed I also needed at the time. Yes. And that actually helped me a lot. It did help me a lot in spite of, you know, some of the trials I was going through at the time. I wouldn't say that it was all rosy. There were very tough times. You know, parents cannot prepare you for everything. I also learned that. There were a lot of things that I'm sure if my dad was alive and I told him, he'd probably be screaming. But at least the best they can do is give you a good foundation. You know, being a single girl in a city like Port Harcourt at the time, you know, first looking for a job or, you know, getting a job and then trying to sell products to clients or meeting new people. Also living, you know, at the time I had flatmates, which was good for me. They were female like myself. But living alone as a single girl in Port Harcourt was also a new experience. And I did get, there were some things that came up that I didn't expect. You know, as a young single girl in the corporate world, you get to experience, I don't know if every female can say this, but I think it's still quite prevalent in our corporate world today. Oh, I got to experience sexual harassment. You understand? Yeah. The idea is, as a single girl in the corporate world, if you're looking for maybe an account, you expected to compromise in some way. So I did have to deal with that. You know?
How are you able to deal with that? Because number one, being single in Nigeria, you know, that's already a big challenge. And then you are in a position or a job where, you know, like you said, you know, you have to go and you're trying to sell a product or a service to a company, and then certain things are expected of you. How are you able to deal with that?
I can, like I mentioned earlier, it was predominantly a male, you know, dominated field, IT. So most of the time, if you were presenting your product or making a presentation to anyone in most of the IT, departments in companies, it was to a male. Half the time, you find that there were very few females in the room. Hence, the perception was that as a female, you probably might not be up to par, you know, when it came to your male counterparts. Secondly, I can't speak for any other female in that industry, but I can only speak for myself. The second idea was that as females, we all know what discrimination is like as a female. I like to think that, you know, we're all aware of discrimination and bias against women in the corporate world. But especially for single girls or single women, you know, who are trying to make it in any corporate environment or specifically in male-dominated fields, there is that bias. Even in the company that you work in, even where you are working, you know, there is the bias, you know, against women in that industry. So whenever you go out as a female to make maybe a presentation or try to introduce your products, the idea is that you are not there because you have the capacity or the capability to do the job. You understand what I'm trying to say? The idea is that the reason why they employed you is because you're a pretty face. You're a pretty lady, and that's why, and you look good. The idea is for you to look pretty and probably, you know, use your features that to convince a client, not because you have the ability to, you know, truly convince the client of the superiority of your services or your products. You understand what I'm trying to say? And so that was for me a new experience, because of course that was my first job, first experience in the corporate world having to deal with that kind of bias. But like I said, my dad did raise me to always be able to stand up for myself. I didn't experience that kind of bias at home, so I did not have that chip on my shoulder. I think that helped me a lot. I was able to stand up for myself in any situation, especially that kind of situation. Exactly. So my foundation was one of the things that helped me. So actually, I recognized it for what it was, but most of the time, I did not allow that to faze me. I knew that the problem was not with me, but with the culture. You understand what that was currently prevalent in the industry. Once I already had that attitude or that mindset, it was something that I could overcome easily and move on to the next thing and do what I needed to do to succeed, you know, in the job and all that, or the job. So yes.
And I guess also knowing your products really well was also a plus, because they realized that, you know, very quickly that you know your stuff. You're not there as a pretty face, but you're there as a professional.
Yes, because what happens most of the time for a few colleagues in the industry was whenever they experience that kind of attitude, you know, they tend to be a bit intimidated, you know, not wanting to continue, feeling a bit, you know, how will I say it? Many of them became discouraged, you know, in sales, in IT, in that industry. But for me, it was more of a challenge that I was willing to take on, which is why I remained in IT and moved on to sales in IT in other companies. And I stayed for like over a decade or two decades. I continued. So for me, it was not something that was supposed to discourage me or faze me or make me turn back. But it was just a hurdle I needed to actually cross. And I did.
So how did your career evolve from there? So from Linkserv, then what came next?
From Linkserv, my parents, like I mentioned, my dad had been transferred to the South when we were still young. But with the passing of my dad, my mom decided to move back to Lagos. That's my entire family. And so the moving process was something that, you know, also was a bit stressful. And also, if you recall, around that time, just after the youth service, around the end of the millennium, which was 2000, there was a lot of, should I say, unrest in the South. Yes. Mm-hmm. So at the time, Delta State in the South region, they had a lot of skirmishes, a lot of tribal wars. So it actually, you know, made my mom reconsider remaining there. And of course, my dad had passed. So my family had to move. It wasn't an easy time. And so I spent a lot of time visiting my family in Lagos, and I decided to leave. I left Port Harcourt. Starting again in Lagos was, I wouldn't say it was a trial, but it wasn't that easy either. But I actually got another job here. So I also started working in sales, in IT. In fact, at the time, I joined a company called Sema, and they were into software as well. Payment, electronic payment software. Yes, platforms and card payments. So it was also another a new field for me at the time. Just like the ISP or Linksev that I joined, there was a lot to learn. And it was predominantly male, of course. We were just two females at the time, you know, on the team. But fortunately for me, I had another great boss. He was a male at the time, you know. And the experience was something that actually I would... credit for the growth of my career as time went on, because at SEMA I got to learn a lot. There it was, at the time in that was in 2000 and I think 5 or 6, electronic payment or card payment was new to Nigeria as well, if you recall. So not a lot of people knew about that. It was pretty new in the, to the, you know, our culture here. And trying to sell a product that was new, you know, that the adoption process was still still very fresh, was not easy. It was another challenge for me. But like all challenges, it requires that you take it head on. So, yes, it's been an interesting journey for me in IT sales. I think I was the sales manager for the company. I later joined another firm. After I left SEMA for Verifone, it was a UK firm. So in Verifone, I was employed as a sales manager for West Africa. And that required that I did a lot of travel. It was also the first job that required that I work from home. I remember the first time my boss told me then, my new boss at the time, Mark O'Flynn, and he said, look, you'd have to work from home. You get a laptop. And you cover this region, which is West Africa. And to me, it sounded a bit strange. So, but it was also something new that I had to learn. You know.
Okay. So how was it? Because now, I mean, with the pandemic, you know, the lockdown, I mean, we were all forced to work from home. Yeah. But I mean, at that time, you were really ahead of the curve. What was it like working from home? So like Monday morning, everyone is rushing out of the house, and then there you are, maybe still in your pajamas or maybe dressed. And what kind of comments did you get from people? Did people think that you were into like online fraud, or they were just like they couldn't understand it? And how were you able to organize your time?
Okay, so the concept of online fraud was not even something that people were aware of at the time, believe me. When I joined Verifone, that was in 2007 or 2008. It was new to me too. And I remember the first time I told my family that, look, I wouldn't be going into the office. I've gotten a new job. However, I will be working from home, which required that I set up a home office. My boss told me, first, you need to set up your office. I would say one thing, I've been blessed with some good bosses over the couple of years, not all of them, but some. And I remember Mark was one of the few people who actually helped me to settle into that job. He had been doing it for a couple of years, you know, prior to my joining the company. So the way it worked was that he covered EMEA, which was Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and I was on that in his team. We had like two or three other people on, you know, in our team. So I was, I think, the newest member. So I had a lot to learn from them, but they actually did give me some, he gave me a lot of guidance, which was that first you needed to organize yourself, set up a proper home office, ensure that you are equipped at all times. Communication was very key. I got a BlackBerry, a laptop, good internet service. And and for the first couple of months, I think he took me under his wing, because joining Verifone at the time, that was a multinational company. And they their core area was payments, which was payment software and point of sale units. So, and then it was global. So we had teams all over the world. It also required that anything I had to do was going to be from my own base. And it required that I'd be in contact with the head office, which was in UK at the time, as much as possible. So communication was always very, very key. It was also a job that required that I do a lot of travel. Fortunately, I'm someone who loves to travel. My dad was in travel industry. So as a kid, we traveled a lot and I always loved it. So I could adapt easily to that part, though there was also the perception as a single lady, why would you take a job like that? Some of my aunts would say, oh, you're off again and all of that. So, but it made the job more interesting. Regarding the stay at home part of it, yes, even my mom found it strange. I mean, there was a time they would just come into my room, look at my laptop and everybody, you know, and whenever you had to tell some members of the family that, oh, where are you working now? So where's your office? And I'm like, I work from home. There was this pause, you know, this long pause, and they would look at me, blink a bit, not knowing what to make of it. You understand? Mm-hmm. It was pretty new to a lot of people at the time. So, but they would just, I didn't think they knew how best to respond. So they wouldn't really say anything. Other people would start asking questions. So what's it like? What's it like? You know, do you work Mondays to Saturdays? You know, who do you talk to? Where are your colleagues and all that? So yes, it was pretty strange. But for me, it was, I wouldn't say anything other than the fact that it was fantastic. It was new, but it was something ahead of its time, you know? And I found that it was actually efficient. You're working from home. Like I mentioned, first things first was that you needed to ensure that your workspace at home is properly organized. You need to be organized. You must have everything with you. So which are your tools? Maybe your laptop, your phones, communication. Ensure that you are always reachable at the time because you're not in the same physical space as your coworkers or your coworkers at the office. So which means that if you needed to be reached or you need to reach someone or communicate, that must also be put into consideration. So communication was very key. Secondly, you need privacy. You need a quiet environment. So just because you're at home putting on pajamas and slippers doesn't mean that you start working maybe in your living room with the TV on and, you know, maybe the kids running around. You need to create that space for yourself, which I had to do. And you need to be self-motivated, self-driven. So if just because you're working at home, normally you would wake up every day at a certain point in time. And let's say by 5 in Lagos, take your shower. By 5:30, you left the house because you need to resume by 8. But when you're working from home, you don't need to do that. However, you still need to resume by 8. So there is a tendency to, you know, this perception that to have a kind of mindset that, look, I'm working from home, I don't have to resume at this time. But you need to, you must. So your office opens by 8, even if it's the home office. So you're on your laptop by 8 and you maintain your work hours, which is 8 to 5, as the case may be. Also, it requires that you create some balance. The flip side of, you know, working from home is that sometimes a lot of people tend to overwork. So by 5 or 6, when you found that it was late, you have to shut down, because if you don't do that, you will not be able to, you know, make your appointments for the next day, because you have to realize that you need to get off work today so that you can wake up the next day and work. And like I realized as well, unlike other kind of stay-at-home jobs, which was maybe customer service, or maybe you are in charge of maybe filing and all that stuff from home. Sales from home is different. It requires that you be able to schedule your appointments and leave for your appointments on time. So having to balance that, you know, balance working from home with appointments requires that you also have that organizational skill to schedule your appointments, schedule your trips. If you needed to drive or take a cab, you had to meet up with your appointments. sales covering maybe a region that requires travel, requires that you be able to, you know, schedule your flights, ensure that you know, you go to the airport on time, you meet up with your clients or, you know, your meetings, wherever it may be. So for those who are working from home, it's very, very key. I think organization is one of the most important things that you need to put into consideration, organizational skills. And then self-motivation. Because if you're in sales and you're working from home, you are reminded of the fact that you have a target to meet, irrespective whether you're in pajamas or not.
So what are you doing now?
Yes. Which it's funny you should ask that. After I left Verifone, I joined another firm. You know, over the past couple of years, the card payment or electronic payment industry has evolved. The adoption process has actually, should I say, it's matured somewhat. And we find not just banks and private firms keen into this particular culture, but even the government. So I joined a firm as the head of business development they were into financial inclusion for their financial inclusion project. That was in 2015 or so. I later left that firm to join a real estate company as the head of business development. Now, that is completely way, way off my track, my usual, should I say, path. So currently I am in real estate and construction. I work with a firm, is a marine engineering and construction firm. And what we do actually is we're into dredging, construction of roads, and we also build estates. To be honest, real estate was something I'd always been interested in, but on a personal level. You understand what I'm trying to say? My mom is someone who is very, very much into real estate. She would always call me and, you know, let me be aware of real estate opportunities, you know, in Lagos and all that. So when I was approached, you know, when I was, you know, offered the job, I actually had to think, you know, for a while. I had to go back and, you know, consider it, you know, to see if I wanted to change course in terms of my career, you know, completely away from IT. And then I realized that it was something that I already liked, something that I already had an interest in. The one question I had to ask myself was that, was I willing to, you know, change course somewhat, you know, at this stage in my career, in life? You know, it would mean that I had to start learning, you know, some new things, you know, about the industry that I was going into. But then again, I realized that we're always on a learning path anyway, throughout life. In life, you always have to have the attitude of learning. It's one thing that has always helped me. As much as I'd even found myself in IT, it was not always the same. From Linkserv to SEMA to, you know, the other company that I joined, it was IT, but it was different kinds of, you know, there was a change, there was a difference. It was from internet services to card payment to electronic payment. So there was always something new that I had to learn, you know. And so it was the same thing. It was pretty much, there wasn't much, you know, difference in my opinion anyway. After I thought it through, I realized that it was just an opportunity for me to learn something new.
Yeah, you founded the Salt Society. So can you tell us more about the Salt Society?
Salt Society was a volunteer organization that I started a few years back. A friend of mine, I believe, invited me to a program at the time, and I got to meet a couple of young women who at the time had founded their own NGOs. One of them was Fairlife Africa, and the other person I met was Comfort Street Child Foundation. And then, of course, there was you. You had started, I believe, your own NGO at the time as well. And from my interactions, especially with one of them, which was Ufoma, I realized that they really had some challenges. And one of the key or major challenges at the time was fundraising and resource. You know, finding in terms of human resource, financial resources and all that. And I realized that they could not, it was not something they could do on their own. Working with Fela Africa, I got to see their day-to-day administration because I became quite close with them. I would go into their offices and I would see how in some way they were quite overwhelmed having to run the organization and then find ways to, you know, generate funds or get people to help them provide certain resources. So I said, well, if I couldn't even set up my own proper NGO, which was like, you know, set up a proper orphanage or something like that, we could volunteer. And I'm aware that even in other countries, volunteer organizations are actually quite, you know, quite common. People come together and volunteer, help, you know, orphanages, they help NGOs in one way or the other, even if it's not just to raise funds or provide financial resources. They also give their services. You understand what I'm trying to say? They give themselves to the organization. So that was how it started. Yeah. And luckily for me, I found quite a number of friends from work and from church who were willing to actually give their time, give their skills, experience, and even resources as well. And they actually helped to make it a success. You understand? So at the time, Fair Life Africa had quite a number of children that they were trying to support, or they were supporting at the time, in terms of their education and all that. So they always had this need for instructors, for teachers, for people to come in and, you know, help with the children. And so that's how we started. My work in the past couple of years has been quite, should I say, engaging, you know. So I've had a bit of challenge trying to balance, you know, work and also trying to run the NGO. So, but of late, you know, there's been a pressure upon me, even from internally, to be more structured and organized and to actually drive it to that level whereby we always have an inflow of people coming in, which means we need to go out there and really partner with, you know, the organizations, the corporate the companies, you know. Mm-hmm. So get them signed on with Salt Society, you know, maybe as part of their maybe HR policies and stuff like that. And once we have that, we can always be assured of an inflow of volunteers.
Moving to fun things, what do you do
in my downtime? Yes, I love to read. I love to read. I grew up reading a lot. Every novel I could get my hands on. So I love to read. I love to watch movies, as a lot of my friends know. I grew up on them. I grew up on books and movies, you know. And so I love film. I love music. I listen to music now and then. I have a particular love for classical and rock music, strangely enough. But I actually love to write poetry. So I love the arts, really, yes. I write short stories as well, you know, yes. So I fancy myself being a novelist at some point in time. My career has actually taken a turn, a major detour, you know, from the original path, which is from IT straight to real estate. And it's fun for me now. It's been fun past couple of years, and this has allowed me to dream. So I want to go into real estate, just like the IT industry, which is male dominated, at least, though I think women are beginning to bridge the gap. The same goes for the real estate industry, especially commercial real estate. It's still a male-dominated field, you know. Even that the entire value chain actually is dominated by men. So in terms of real estate as a career and also as, you know, a business, we have very few women, you know, involved. Very few men even understand the value of the real estate industry in terms of investments, as an investment platform as well. So I got to realize that recently when I was invited to speak at a conference for women. And so there were so many questions, and I realized that a lot of them did not really have an idea of just how, you understand, how vibrant the industry was. And many of them did not have an idea of how they could play in that industry and, you know, grow in it. So So one of the things that I decided this year was to put together a platform for women specifically, you know, to help them, to provide tools and materials, you know, a suitable platform for them to be able to play in that field.
Well, I wish you all the best with that, and I wish you all the best in your next steps, and possibly looking forward to a book of poetry or some fiction sometime in the near future. So thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for joining me on The Other Room in conversation with Biodun Shoyemi. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Biodun spoke about her career of over 20 years in sales and business development. She talked about some of the qualities that have helped her succeed, including humility, her ability to keep learning, perseverance, boldness, creativity, and teamwork. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to The Other Room on your favorite podcast app, and please give us a rating and a review. Until next time, live your life with boldness and joy.